And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Nothing, man. Hugh Freeze stayed out of my DMs today. It's been a good afternoon.
He didn't message me either, that bastard.
All right, Shane, let's jump right into it. And, you know, we this is not strictly news necessarily, but I just thought this was pretty interesting. Pro Football Focus, they issued out their Heisman favorites after 2 weeks of play. And Jeffrey Simmons, the Mississippi State defensive lineman, was on the list. He was among the top, I think, 8 or 9. And I thought that was pretty fascinating. What's your thoughts on big Jeffrey Simmons popping up on a Heisman list?
I love it. I love it when the big boys get a little recognition, and rightfully so. He's graded out as the best defensive interior lineman in the country. And if you watch it, he controls that line of scrimmage. So I'm really excited. It just sucks because we all know at the end of the year, the big ugly won't win, but mm-hmm. I do like him getting the recognition because he's deserved it these first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I believe everything you're saying there, but that, I think just the fact that he's getting recognition, that's about as good as you can expect from a defensive lineman, particularly one who's not getting like tons of sacks as an end or an edge rusher.
So, yeah.
I mean, this is fantastic just for him to get some recognition. He's going to have to keep it up if Mississippi State's going to make some noise in the SEC. But so far, so good for Hale State's touted lineman. But that also got me thinking, you know, if that SEC season ended right now, obviously it doesn't, but if it ended after week two, who are you giving the Heisman Trophy to out of the SEC?
Out of the SEC. Boy, that's a tough one. After 2 weeks, there's several players I like. I like Hardman. I think he's proved that he's athletic and, you know, deserves the award. But I think I'm going to stick with Texas A&M and go with Mon. Even though they lost against Clemson, just what he's been able to do the first 2 weeks impressed the hell out of me. So I think I'm going to go – and I like Travion. Don't get me wrong. I thought Travion would be in the running too. He just he wasn't as productive against Clemson as I like. And it was tough. It was a tough defensive line. But mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Mon.
You know, I'm almost surprised. I thought you were going to make a new rule and give it to Coach O, give it to the first coach. so I was glad to see you didn't do that. But I think the obvious answer is Tua there at Alabama. You know, he's been outstanding. And I think I saw some stat where I believe he's 10 for 10 passing on third down. And he's got like 7 touchdowns and 400 yards, something insane. So, yeah, I think he would be the obvious answer. But because that was such an easy one to do, I'm going to throw out another name who I think I would rather see win it after week two. And that'd be my boy Benny Snell.
Ooh.
Putting that Kentucky team on his back. Him and Terry Wilson, that's a two-headed monster there for Kentucky. They got that big win, obviously, over Florida. Benny Snell was even sick in the opener against Central Michigan, and he still had, I believe, 150 yards, so 120 after contact. That guy's awesome. So I'd give cast my vote for old Benny Snell.
That's a good one. I like old Benny.
All right, Shane, let's jump into the news. And obviously, the big game on everyone's calendar this weekend, LSU at Auburn.
Second down and 7, ball just shaded into LSU territory. Stidham loading and going long, got a man wide open, and he's got him, and it's Hastings touchdown. Throw out in the flat wide out screen, and they're going to get not only a big play and a first down, but they might get a touchdown out of it. All the way inside the 5.
The touchdown maker is going to get the direct snap.
And he's going to take it straight ahead. And 13th score of the year, Kerryon Johnson. And finally they give it to Gage. Gage had a 30-yard touchdown last week, and he's off to the races here. Gage One man to beat. He's all the way down to the 6-yard line. Gage is in the slot. Etling going to throw to the end zone to Gage. Diving attempt. Did he catch it? Yes! Touchdown! Chark camps into this one at the 25. That might be a block in the back. Maybe not. Chark going the other way. Got the corner. Blockers in front. Chark down the sideline. He's going to take it. Touchdown, LSU! The number 10 Tigers of Auburn have one play left. Stidham. Hit by Key. That's the ball game. And the 10th-ranked Tigers fall as well.
I thought it'd be Tennessee UTEP. Just kidding. No, this is a great game. This one's been circled. You know, I was really looking forward to that Georgia-South Carolina game. And now that it's over, I'm moving on to this one. This is the one I'm excited to see as well.
Yeah, you're not the only one. Here's Coach O. He dropped this 60-minute battle quote. It's pretty awesome.
It's going to be 60 minutes. It's going to be an all-out battle.
All right, Shane, does that get you ready for the game or what?
Hell yeah, it does. Coach O's got me.
Now, you go from Coach O, who's fiery, passionate, you go to Gus Malzahn, who I think in another life was a librarian. He met with the press today, and he offered up some thoughts. You know, he even got a little excited. I think he might have had a sip of coffee before this one. So here's Gus Malzahn on Tuesday on this big LSU game.
You know this goes way back in history when LSU and Auburn get together. It's going to be a physical game. And they know that. We know that. And it's always a good one. So the intensity will be very high. Well, I think they're tied for the lead in our league right now, you know, rushing the passer, and they got after both opponents really good. And it's not just one guy. They do it by a group. They'll bring some linebacker pressure, bring a little bit more pressure probably the first couple games than they have in the past. And, you know, they got good cover guys on the back end that allow them to do that.
All right, Shane. So Malzahn's even got a little heat to hit what he's saying. How excited are you for this one?
Oh, God, yeah. This is one I've had circled for a while, and man, this is the opening of SEC. I mean, the Kentucky Florida game was great, but now you got two potential playoff teams going face to face. This is what college football is all about right here.
Yeah, and obviously there's a big revenge factor for Auburn. They blew a 20-point lead in Death Valley, and that seemed to be the beginning of the end, possibly for Malzahn, possibly for that season, and for whatever reason, after that game, it just clicked for the Tigers. They went on that incredible run, beat number one Georgia, beat number one Alabama, making it to the Atlanta for the SEC title game. Gus Malzahn also touched on that, just how tough that LSU loss was last year.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't have to say a whole lot. That was an extremely tough loss. It was the toughest loss of the year last year, and probably one of the toughest since I've been here. And our players, you know, the majority of them are back and went through it and understand it. So there's not going to be a whole lot of motivation and rah-rah stuff as far as last year. You know, this is a new year. We're playing at home. Our guys are extremely motivated right now. But, you know, looking back, that was kind of the turning point of our whole season last year, going through that extremely low time. You know, I think so. Anytime you have a tough loss, especially when we were up 20-0 and we lost, there was a lot of lessons that can be learned that in all phases, and you know how we lost, and you know most teams would have folded their tent, and but our team didn't. They rolled their sleeves up and they finished the year and they took it one game at a time. But at the same time, after that game, it was uphill. It was uphill the rest of the year, and but yeah, our team learned a lot, and you know all of us did.
So yeah, you can tell Shane and think back. No, obviously this rivalry means so much. This game, I think, it had Auburn not went on that incredible run, as crazy as it is to say, I think Gus Malzahn could have been fired last season. You know, had they lost to Georgia, had they lost to Alabama, obviously that didn't happen and he got an extension. So complete 180 there. But, you know, this rivalry brings a lot of passion, a lot of heat. And if you remember, it was only, what was it, two seasons ago, Les Miles after this game. It was a bad loss for LSU and Les Miles was fired the next day. So There's a ton of just a lot of passion with both these fan bases, and they both expect to win this game.
Yeah, man. And You know, we talked about earlier this season that Coach O may have lost his job after this game, you know, but he came out, he beat Miami, and I think I don't think any of those two coaches are in trouble losing their job if they drop this, but all eyes on in the country are going to be watching this game.
Now, Malzahn wasn't the only one to meet with the media today. His quarterback, Jarrett Stidham, met, and he was asked about the LSU game last year, and you know, I thought I was pretty fascinated by his response. He said it in his belief that loss, as tough as it was, it helped them the rest of the year. So here's Jarrett Stidham on losing to LSU last year.
You know, the thing I took away from it is that if we would have won that game, I don't think we would have gone on to go to the SEC Championship, to be honest. We learned a lot about ourselves that game. And like I said, I just don't think the season would have played out the way it did unless we had lost that game.
All right, Shane, it's hard to be that positive after a loss, a devastating loss like that, but, Stidham just seems to be that kind of guy. He sees the bright side in everything.
Yeah, well, this is what they needed. This is what excelled them to that winning streak. This is what excelled them to win over Alabama. You know, they had a tough loss, and they learned a lot from that loss. And you can learn a lot. You know, you see some of the greatest teams – similar situations, they get in a game where they almost lose or they do lose, and the great ones excel and move forward, and that's what they did last year. And obviously, they don't want to have to rely on last year's loss. They got one thing in mind, and that's to make it to the SEC Championship right now.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because that's kind of what happened to Alabama last year. They lost to Auburn in the Iron Bowl and made them miss the SEC Championship game. And obviously, what you do when you drop a game like that, you put your fate in someone else's hands. That's what Alabama did, and that's what the loser of this one will do. But Jarrett Stidham also had another interesting comment on this game. He was just asked about facing Devin White, LSU's outstanding linebacker, throwing against Greedy Williams, their outstanding corner. So here's Jarrett Stidham on what he anticipates going against such an elite defense.
I love it personally. Obviously, Devin's an extremely great football player. You know, probably one of the better ones we'll see all year. And, you know, when you start talking about chess match, you know, that's what I love about football. Because, it just comes down to, like, little details. And, you know, when you're playing a great defense like LSU, led by a great player like Devin White, you know, you got to be on top of your A game. And, you know, I'm sure I'll make checks. They'll make checks. And it's going to be a lot of fun, I think. You know, I like going against really good players, whether if it's Devin White or Greedy Williams, whoever it is. You know, last year, you know, going against Roquan Smith or Minka. You know, I like that challenge. And I think, you know, from a defensive perspective, I think, you know, and I know our guys, they like going against, you know, good guys on offense. It just, you know, ups their game a little bit, kind of, you know, takes you to a different level. So I really look forward to the challenge. You know, once we kind of get into the game plan, I'll know a little bit more of what we're going to do. But I think it's a great challenge.
All right, Shane, Stidham's looking forward to the challenge on Tuesday. Is he going to be looking forward to it after the game comes Saturday?
I think he's going to be sore, man. I think LSU's going to throw all kinds of stuff their way. Side, the LSU side, what kind of, I mean, they don't need to get one dimensional in this game. And what I'm hearing is a lot of Auburn talking about they want to make sure that Burroughs wins or loses this game. What do you think of that?
I mean, I obviously understand that talk going into it, because Joe Burrow is kind of the unknown here. He's obviously never played in an SEC game. He's only been in the system for a little while, although reaching back to our interview with Glenn Gilbo, who noted that Steve Ensminger didn't even put in the offense until the fall camp. So it's not to say Joe Burrow's behind anyone. He was basically up to speed as well as every quarterback on the roster there. But, you know, that's an interesting topic, because Jamal Dean, the outstanding Auburn defensive back, he too met with the media on Tuesday, and he was asked about Joe Burrow, and I did not realize the connection until this point, but Dean played for, well, he never played for Ohio State. He signed with Ohio State. He never ended up playing for them. He transferred down to Auburn. And obviously Joe Burrow went down to LSU this offseason, so there's a connection there. So I'm going to play this clip from Dean just when he was asked about Joe Burrow and just his thoughts on the LSU quarterback.
I actually like Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I'm pretty familiar with him. We both was a commit to Ohio State at the time.
I was already on campus, but he was still there. So I'm pretty sure if he felt like how I felt, he probably have a chip on his shoulder, and he probably want to prove that. He want to prove to Ohio State why he should have been there playing.
Yeah,
I mean, I know he's a great passer when he set his feet, and he's real smart too.
All right, Shane, so this kind of continues the theme we've seen where, you know, the LSU coaches are buying in to Joe Burrow. Obviously, the players are buying into Joe Burrow. I think even you and I are buying into Joe Burrow. Is there any player on this field that stands to gain more from a big performance and a win than old Smokin' Joe?
No. No, not at all. One second. Who's Smokin'? Smokin' Joe Burrow? Is that his name?
I just made
that. Okay. You threw me off there. No, nobody stands more to gain. Burrow's, like I said in the last podcast, we didn't even know his name really starting this season. And now he's on shows, he's talking to Paul Feinbaum. I mean, he's everywhere. People know who Burrows is, but we don't know.
Well, speaking of his name, Shane, it's Burrow.
Oh, what'd I say?
Burrows.
Burrow's arm. I was plural, giving it possession.
No, but your point there was that no one knew his name, and then you didn't know.
Good point. I'm still learning, man. It's week two.
No, it's fine. Everyone knows who you're talking about there, but
yeah. We'll stick with Joe. And the thing about Joe is, you know, everybody going into this season, nobody knew who Joe was. He was a question mark. Is he going to be the guy? He's a transfer, and we realized real quick that there was a reason he moved down there. There's a reason Coach O wanted him on the team, and through 2 weeks, he's looked very impressive. But I don't think he's been tested. He hasn't had to throw. He hasn't had to control the game or take it in his own hands. And this week, he's going to have to because Auburn is going to make sure that LSU throws the ball. They're going to stack that box. They're going to make sure that they close the running game and put this in Burrow's hands. And that's Burrow, sorry. And that's what's going to happen here. So does he excel? I don't know. We haven't seen it yet.
And I thought Dean's comment there at the end particularly was really interesting. I'd never thought of it until now, but you know, Joe Burrow wants to In some sense, because it seems like he obviously has a lot of connections to Ohio State. He's been very supportive or the players have been supportive of him, and I've not heard him say any ill will towards Ohio State or Urban Meyer. But he probably, in the back of his mind, wants to let Ohio State know they made a mistake by not naming him the starter. They let him walk out the door. I don't think they really had an option in the end. But, you know, he's probably got a fire to him. Like you said, hardly anybody knows who this guy was a couple weeks ago. LSU, for whatever reason, never let him speak to the media until that Miami game. Maybe they were just trying to keep him under wraps. I don't know. But,
yeah,
this is a chance where, you know, we want to talk Heisman. I don't want to put the cart before the horse here. But if he has a big game, he leads them to a win here. I think he's got to go right up to the top of the list in the SEC.
Absolutely. Won some big games. And that's what Dean was saying. These guys got chips on their shoulder. They left Ohio State because they weren't playing. And now they are. And now the spotlight is on them for the game of the week.
All right, Shane, so we'll leave there. Let's go to Knoxville. Want to just talk a little.
Let me ask you one real quick thing. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything on Will Hastings and Eli Stove? Are they going to be playing a little bit more this week? I know they kind of worked them in a little bit last week. But have you heard anything on that side?
No, I don't think they are near hitting the field from what I understand. They're on the practice field, but I don't think they're prepared to have those guys get hit at all.
Okay.
All right, Shane, leaving the big game, let's go to Knoxville, where, you know, one guy that's quickly emerged there as it looks like one of Jeremy Pruitt's, you know, he's not said this publicly, but I would believe one of his favorite players already on Rocky Top, and that's the freshman running back Jeremy Banks. Banks, you know, he had a big performance there against ETSU. Yes, it was ETSU, but, you know, he not only fired up his teammates, but it seemed to fire up the fans, and ton of energy with this guy. He's a, you know, just as Paul Bain calls him, he's a hammer. He's not a nail. So I want to play this clip from a couple of Banks's teammates just talking about what they think of him.
He puts his head down. He's gonna go regardless.
He's a hammer. He's a hammer. This 2000 players is a hammer and a nail, and he definitely has identified himself as a hammer. We definitely respect him as a hammer. He's a hard runner. He makes us all better. I love the energy. He comes in tons of emotion, and he helps us all get better each and every day, and he brings the energy to practice every day. He has a lot of respect.
He's just a dog, you know. He brings it every day. Jeremy is definitely a physical back. You know, you see a lot of that through Ty, Tim, you know, Madre as well. They all bring a level of physicality, you know, and it's expressed every week, and Jeremy did a great job this week.
Yeah, I saw how the crowd reacted. Yeah, the crowd energy gave us energy. He's a great player, man, and I can't wait to see what he does throughout his career.
All right, Shane, based on those comments, you got to believe that Banks is quickly emerging as one of the team's favorite players.
Oh, he's a fan's favorite player too. He came out, lowered that head, and this that physical running, I mean, that's something you can get behind. Banks came out busting heads last week, and it looked awesome. This offensive line wasn't doing it, and Banks made it happen. Of course, you know, they kind of gelled there toward the end, and I really love these Tennessee running backs. And I'm not saying that just because I'm a homer. First week, Jordan came out, you know, led the league or led the country, and what was it, missed tackles or something like that?
Yeah, I think missed tackles forced.
Okay, missed tackles forced. And then you got Banks this week just trucking people. And then hopefully this week we're going to have Ty Chandler back, and maybe he – because he's an explosive, you know, he's one of those guys that can just break it wherever he's at. So I'm really liking the dynamic of the running backs here at Tennessee.
Yeah, and I think this is a preview of what Jeremy Pruitt wants. He wants a tough, physical team. So, you know, this is obviously one of his guys, his hand-picked guys. So I think that's why he picked him for a reason. He wants these guys to set the tone. Now, I think it's obviously easier said than done against ETSU, but keep in mind, what's Jeremy Banks, how long has he been on campus? Like 3 months, you know? So
yeah.
Once Pruitt, you know, I don't want to make Tennessee fans look too far into the future here, but once he gets a class or two under his belt, you got to think that, you know, as much as they like Banks, there's going to be 20 Banks on the roster, and I think that's the future. It may take a little while, but I think that's what Jeremy Pruitt is attempting to build there on Rocky Top.
And that's something we've wanted. You know, when Jalen came in, that's kind of what we were expecting, was a big physical back, but he ran standing straight up. Banks is the opposite. He's a big physical back that's ready to lower the boom, and you really noticed it on the goal line. I mean, there was no way you're going to keep him out of the end zone. So you got to feel really confident in that, going from shotgun on the 1 yard line to a fullback just dive with a little Derrick Henry Jr. back there.
All right, Shane, speaking of, you know, blowing your head and lowering a boom, old Benny Snell, he was on SEC Network recently, and he was talking about the block that kind of sealed the Florida game there. It was by old Bunchy Stallings. So we're going to play this quick clip of Benny breaking down what he saw on that play.
The block Bunchy threw yet?
Oh, of course. I seen it in front of me. And whenever he made it happen, I was screaming in my head. I'm like, oh, my God. Boy, you done did it again.
Bunchy done did it again.
How about that, Shane? Old Bunchy done did it again. I mean, oh, my God. For anyone that's not seen this, I think the Florida guy may have died on the field. I mean, he just got engulfed and just pancaked unlike I've ever seen.
It was one of those, man. I had to rewind it twice. I wanted to see what just happened there because it happened so quick. And yeah, Benny had front row view of it.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was incredible. And that's something that I wrote about today because Todd Grantham recently met with the media, Florida defensive coordinator, and he kind of talked about it. He said, you know, we got our tails kicked out here. So here's Todd Grantham on his unit just getting whipped physically.
Number one, we got our tails kicked. Okay, I mean, you can't hide that. I mean, we always talk about playing to a standard and playing to an identity. We didn't do that. You know, we always talk about stopping the run and affecting the quarterback. We didn't do either one in the game and didn't give ourselves a chance to win because of that. You know, there's a certain physicality you got to play with up front. You got to be able to set the edge. You got to be able to strike blockers. And really, you got to trust, like, I'm going to stay in my gap, and then the other guy's going to be in his gap.
All right, Chad, I think Dan Mullen said his squad missed 20 tackles, which led to like 180 yards after contact. That's got to be obviously a huge concern for Florida moving forward.
Absolutely. 20 missed tackles. We're going to be doing drills all week if I'm the coach, because you can't have that. You can't have that in the SEC and expect to win. And I don't think enough respect was given to Kentucky's offensive line. Those boys, if you watch that film, they came out and they kicked ass. There was a 2-3 yard push every time they snapped the ball. So I'm not surprised that Benny had as many yards as he did, or Wilson had as many yards as he did. Credit to them old linemen, because they really came out.
All right, Shane, let's shift down to Columbia, where Will Muschamp's dealing with, you know, obviously a difficult loss. You know, they got to be really careful that you know, the season doesn't slip away from them. I don't think it will, but there's a huge concern now with their offense. Didn't get any push against Georgia. Passing game was off the mark for the most part. Shaq Bentley had a couple nice passes for sure, and they dialed up a nice trick play. But beyond that, not a whole lot of effectiveness there against Georgia. Huge disappointment. Here's Will Muschamp on Tuesday giving his thoughts on his offense's lackluster performance.
You know, we needed to run the ball more last week. But when you call RPOs and you're reading a linebacker and he flows and you end up throwing the ball, you had a called run. And sometimes you get a little – out of whack numbers wise as you're calling the game, and that's something we need to do a better job of paying attention to. Well, Ben, you're calling a run, and then you're based on a look, you're throwing the football, and we had some effective gains the other night throwing the football, but you need to be able to call it and haul it at times and just run the football and know you want to hand the ball off regardless of what the look gives you, and you evaluate what you did well, and there were some things that were positive and some things obviously you need to work on. And I think that's true in whether you win the game or you lose the game. So I don't think we need to confuse not playing well and not trying. We tried. Our guys played hard. Our guys fought their butts off in the first half to put themselves in a position. We didn't come out the second half and we got blocked and didn't respond well defensively. But let's don't confuse not playing well with not playing hard. Our guys played hard in the game.
All right, Shane, this is a unit that we've talked about for weeks on end, it seems like. We did, you know, this is a hire that we both were you know, not so sure on. What do you think after Muschamp has made these comments?
Well, you know, I listened to this whole thing, and Muschamp really hit hard that a lot of blame has been placed on this offense, and more of it should have been placed on the defense. Because of a lot of busted plays, you know, some of the slot guys weren't covered, and really put them behind the eight ball. So, listening to him, you know, he made a good point. They had 200 yards total offense by halftime, you know. So, this offense was moving. Now, he obviously wants to work on the efficiency. He can't have three and outs. You know, that second half's what really killed him, coming out and just dropping three in a row. That's something you can't have, especially if you're in a fast-paced offense. But I think there's going to be a little more emphasis on the running game. He wasn't excited about the RPO. He was, you know, with those run-pass options, they're dialed up as a run. And if you're keeping an eye on that linebacker and the defensive line, if you don't see it, if you see them coming up, you're looking for the pass. And he thinks that there was a couple times Bentley should have handed the ball off. And you see that because they just kind of got away from the running game. So I think with Marshall coming in town, I don't know what the weather's going to be like. you know, I was looking at the hurricane forecast, and I think it's going to be hitting Saturday evening, which helps that this is a 12 o'clock game. But I really do think that we're going to see a lot of running in this game.
Yeah, that's like you said, if it's even played, there's tons of cancellations. East Carolina's canceled their game. NC State's canceled their game. So this will be interesting. I don't know. Will Muschamp was asked about it today, and he sounded pretty confident that, you know, as far as he's been told, it will be played, and that's how they're preparing. But I think that's kind of the coach's mindset. It's obviously not up to him, and he said they'll do whatever they're told, and they're making sure that all the players from and their families from around the area, or the families, are taken care of. And I didn't realize that the school can kind of help the families. You know, they have a fund set up to where they bring in people. And he said they did this last year for players' families that were in Florida. And this is not just the football team, but across the board, across the school. So that's great to hear. And hopefully,
and I'm sure there's other universities doing it too, because there's several recruits on each team that maybe came from the Carolinas.
Without a doubt.
I'm curious though, after Marshall, what are their next two games?
After Marshall, South Carolina hits the road. They go to Vanderbilt, which is starting to look sneaky good, and then at Kentucky, which obviously just beat Florida.
Because you and I were talking earlier about this. This Marshall game is important. I mean, obviously safety is important, and if they don't think they could play this game, then they shouldn't. But this is a game. This is an opportunity to get them back on track. And if this thing's canceled, could you imagine just going straight back to conference play? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, they'd get another week of rest after that ass-whooping Georgia game. That's the plus side. But, yeah, they need to get this thing right. They need to get this offense firing on gear. Like you said, the second half, totally ineffective for the most part. His defense has been abused by Georgia. They need to get their confidence back up. I think going on the road back-to-back, if they don't play this week, I think they'll lose one of those, if not both, because it remains to be seen how good Vanderbilt is. Vanderbilt is playing at Notre Dame, so that's a big one. But I don't know. I would think at heading into the season, you'd think South Carolina would win both of those games. But keep in mind, there's not a single player on the Gamecocks roster that's ever beaten Kentucky. They're 0 for their last four, I believe. So
yeah, good point.
That's a tough one. All right, Shane, speaking of a tough one, Ole Miss hosting Alabama this week. I don't know. They do have an outstanding offense, but they have a non-existent defense. And Mac Luke was given his, you know, he spoke recently about just the challenge that Alabama presents. So here's Luke on facing the Crimson Tide.
I think anytime you have the number one team in the country and the opportunity, but again, I think the focus is we get 12 games, and we have to take advantage of each and every one. But anytime you have you got a night game in Vaught Hemingway against the number one team in the country, I think there is a little bit of extra juice.
All right, Shane. So yeah, Alabama week is that, you know, that's the main week for everybody these days. Even old, you know, Arkansas State and Louisville leading up to the season. So will Ole Miss fare any better than those schools did?
Maybe. I'm definitely going to be watching it because it's going to be an exciting game regardless. I mean, Bama's always had a great defense. I don't think this is the year. If you're looking in years past, I think it's kind of a step down from where it was, but they're going to get some good reps this week because Ole Miss is going to come out gunslinging. They can't overlook Ole Miss, because Ole Miss can score at will if they get firing on all cylinders. They're 2-0, man. Who knows?
Yeah, and the weakness, if you can call it that, of the Alabama defense has always been the isolation they have with their corners. They expect those guys to hold up in man coverage. It allows the pass rush to come through. And that we've seen that time and again. If you have the quarterback and the receivers to expose Alabama, they can be hit. That's how they basically have been beaten every time they've been beaten in the last 6-7 years, which is like four times.
Yeah.
But basically, Ole Miss has the recipe there. They obviously don't have the defense. So, I don't know. It's kind of like we've kind of joked about, maybe they've been practicing onside kicks all week. That's what I hope they're doing there, because they can keep up with them on offense, and they may have to get clever on how to make sure they don't surrender the ball to Alabama.
Well, you know, it's like Tiamo said last week, every game's a bowl game for these guys. They have nothing to lose. So if they want to put up 70 points against nobody, if they want to gunsling it, go for it on fourth down against Alabama, why not? You know, have fun. If you create that fun environment, it's not going to be hard to recruit down there, because if I'm a receiver and I want to get to the NFL, I want to go to a team that's going to be launching it. So I think they're not going to hold back this week. And now on the other side of the ball, something interesting is Jalen. Jalen played last week, which I was surprised. So that's two games in, and I really think that he's not going anywhere, and he kind of knows his role. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting because there was a report that Jalen Hurts was basically going to redshirt and have 2 years left, and that was prior to the Arkansas State game. And I don't know if Saban heard that or if he maybe that was not his plan or he was just trying to piss people off. I don't know, but he played him anyway, so he's 2 for 2, Jalen Hurts is. So he's only got 2 more chances if that is indeed the plan. I think based on the fact that he played against Arkansas State, that's not the plan.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that one, but it's obviously not affected the chemistry there at Alabama yet. But going back to what you said earlier on Ole Miss, you know, think back a week ago. What were people saying about Kentucky playing at Florida? I mean, you had David Pollock laughing about it. You got Tebow laughing about it. And, you know, they went in there and they got it done. You know, what were people saying about Arkansas going to Colorado State outside of old cousin Shane? I don't remember anyone picking that one. So this is college football again. This is not the NFL. These are not professionals. Sometimes if Alabama does not take Ole Miss seriously and Ole Miss is locked in, you know, I'm not going to be picking the Rebels to win this game, but let's not act like they have no chance.
Exactly, man. This is their toughest test. I mean, as far as Louisville and Arkansas State, they have, when Saban says the season starts now, he knows it. And he's trying to get these boys fired up and not think that Ole Miss is just going to get ran all over, because they're going to come out gunslinging, and this could be a hell of a game.
All right, final note we wanted to touch on here, Shane. Let's jump to Vanderbilt. We're old anchor down Commodores, Derek Mason, talking about the big trip to Notre Dame this week. And this is an opportunity against a top 10 team. Like, you know, we say top 10 team, but this really clearly just based on preseason rankings and beating Michigan. And we still don't know how good Michigan is. So it may not be fair to say Notre Dame is a true top 10 team, but still a huge test for this Commodore team. Here's Derek Mason on the trip to Notre Dame.
Every game that we play from here on out is a program elevator. So this is the one that's next. We feel like this is the game that probably, you know, our fan base, our guys have been looking for. You know, game 3 was circled on the calendar when we came into the season, but you had to go get through game 1 and game 2 to get to game 3. So here we are, a great challenge in front of us. I look forward to it. I know our guys do as well. Let's get ready to anchor down.
All right, Shane, do you give the Commodores a chance to make this one a close against the Fighting Irish?
Yeah, I really do, because, you know, we're talking about Reddit. You know, we just started this new platform, and one of the questions I asked on there is, who do you think? If there was an upset this week, who do you think you'd have? And I thought that Vandy and Notre Dame would be the one. You know, I'm buying in. Mason has got a hell of a defense. Shermer's a hell of a quarterback. They've got the things they need to win this game. And what I think is going to help Vanderbilt is just the fact that they have that persona of being the worst team in the SEC. And I don't think they are this year. And maybe if Notre Dame feels like they are, maybe they overlook Vanderbilt, because I really think this is going to be a good game. I really do. I think Mason's going to line some stuff up and have that defense humming. And if they keep this thing close, yeah, watch out. This could be an upset.
All right, Shane. So you picked Vanderbilt to lose to Middle Tennessee. You picked Vanderbilt to lose to Nevada. Now it sounds like you're picking Vanderbilt to beat Notre Dame. So that means they're going down this weekend.
That's right. Hey, I'm telling you, we got a follower on there, 7Buckets2, said his upset was Vandy to beat Notre Dame. I think it happened. So there's a lot of people starting to buy into Vanderbilt, and I'm one of them.
All right, Shane, that's all I got for today. You got anything else before we hop off here?
Let's see. Nope. We got the hurricane coming in. There's a lot of other elements, you know. Of course, this is 9/11. Mm-hmm. This was a big day, and I'll never forget when it happened. I was at the University of Tennessee, and I was walking to class, and everybody's at these TVs, and of course they had this, I don't know, they had this program going on at the time where they always ran stuff on the TV, but I thought the crowd was a little bigger than usual. And so when I got to the second TV and monitor and saw all these people looking at it, I stopped and couldn't believe it, man. So it's hard to believe that, what was that, 17 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, if anybody that listens had some family or friends, you know, involved with that, you know, I don't know what I'm supposed to say on this, but it was a bad situation, and I think it should be recognized, so.
Yeah, definitely. Good call. And that reminds me, I saw a video today of old Pat Tillman, the former Arizona Cardinal, who, you know, he joined the military after September 11th and died in Afghanistan, I believe. So, and he kind of mentioned how, I think it was, I don't know if it was in reaction to 9/11 or it was right before, but I think he was just referencing, you know, how much respect he's got for the military. He came from a military family and, you know, he appreciate, you know, I believe he said his grandfather was at Pearl Harbor during the attack, and he looks up to those people, and he said I haven't done a damn thing with my life compared to the people in the service academy. So, and we all know what happened next with him. So you know, a true hero, and there was a lot of heroes there that perished on September 11th. So definitely a day to honor and recognize all those men and women that gave their lives.
Absolutely. My brother, proud listener of this podcast, you know him well, and Afghanistan, Iraq, did them both, and you know, I sat here and did nothing, and so I really do respect all military, you know, law enforcement, firefighters, first rescue members. You know, this is it's a humbling day. So that's all I have to say, Mike.
All right, let's go on that note, Shane. Thanks, as always, for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for out there for listening. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, buddy. Go Vols.
All right, Shane, so...
Oh, wait. Were you playing a clip or something?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
I'll just edit out your nonsense.
I didn't know if I was supposed to say something there.
Hold on.
Get 'em, dogs.